You're listening to Woman at Work Radio. I'm your host, Aliza Sherman, and I speak with entrepreneurs, experts, and authors about the issues business women face every day. This is show number 8, and I'm speaking with Anne Charles, CEO of BrandFog and founder of Great Leaders Conference. We talk about corporate social responsibility, or CSR, and what that means to the woman-owned business.
Can you define, for people who are less familiar with the term CSR, or corporate social responsibility, what does that look like? Maybe give a couple of examples of what you would say is classic CSR efforts.
Okay, so one of the speakers at our event is Jeffrey Schwarz, who's the CEO of Timberland, you know, the shoe company. And
yes.
Timberland has for many, many years now, I guess since he took it over from his grandparents, has been about thinking about the communities in which they do business and trying to give back to the communities in which they do business. They've also had a sensibility around recycling, and Jeffrey Schwarz was a real pioneer in working with his competitors across the board, which was pretty much unheard of a few years back, in terms of figuring out how to recycle rubber and recycle other types of materials that go into the products that they make. So corporate social responsibility is basically having a commitment to the triple bottom line, what they call the triple bottom line, which is people, planet, and profits. So it's almost a new social contract between a business organization and the communities that support them, meaning rather than the only responsibility of a business, I would say, in the past was around financial responsibility, making profits, paying taxes, and employing people, now there's sort of a much broader look at how businesses need to live in the ecosystem that's around them.
I like to think that based on what I've seen with women-owned businesses, that women almost have a more natural inclination to consider people, planet, in addition to profit. And I'm not sure if I'm just being biased, or do you see more of a trend toward that, or what are you seeing in terms of the types of companies that immediately establish more of that sense of corporate social responsibility and even implement programs and such? Is that just sort of my own personal bias, or do you see any kind of trend? Is it broken down between the sexes in any way?
I think that I would take the same view as you, just which is probably a little biased in any case, but a lot of these things are born out of experience. It does sort of come naturally, I think, for women sometimes as caregivers to be thinking externally, right, and be thinking about the way in which that they work, how that impacts others and outside of their company, as well as what's happening internally inside the company. From an industry perspective, however, still in this country, most CEOs are men by a long shot, and I think the leadership within those companies is changing, and they're changing for a number of reasons, which I'll go into in a minute. But back to the question of gender, I think, you know, a lot of women are already in nonprofits. A lot of women are entrepreneurs in that 70% of businesses that are small businesses, a lot of those businesses are run by women. And I think they take it a different approach towards, by and large, towards running their business. Now, the bigger effect, the bigger change on all of leadership or business leadership is really because of the impact of social media, making companies very transparent, you know, in a way that there is no such thing as the closed corporate culture anymore. You can't really control the message. Constituents, customers, they all want to know, you know, what does that company or brand believe in? What does that CEO stand for? And they're asking those kind of questions, and they're writing about it on blogs and talking about it on Twitter and so forth. So by necessity, executives and brands are coming around to the notion that, oh, you know, I really have to respond to those things. And by the way, I have to have something to say. I have to say what our company believes in. And we have to talk about if we're doing food programs in you know, maybe poor regions where we do business, or if we're, doing volunteerism. We need to start talking about that so our communities and constituents can understand that across social media.
That's really interesting, too, that you brought together CSR and social media, that you're actually pinpointing a need to move toward being more expressive and overt about your corporate social responsibility because of the transparency issues, because of the way that anybody could find out or talk about anything potentially on a global scale, which
yes.
can then greatly affect your company's reputation. What about tokenism? Like, it seems to me it's easy for a company now to just pay some lip service and put out a Facebook page saying that they're doing all these great things, but having it be very low impact.
The impact of social media has been that it has just lit a fire under organizations and corporations. And that is, you know, there's studies that are coming out saying kids coming out of college would rather work for companies with a good reputation in social responsibility. There are many surveys as well saying that employees would rather work for a company with a good, you know, coming into a company with a good social responsibility reputation. And customers would rather buy from those companies if given an equal choice of two different products. And that's where I see that we're at a tipping point right now, because when this becomes a economic reality, that it impacts the bottom line and that customers feel like they have a right to know and want to know, are you doing the right thing by the communities in which you do business and by the people that work for you and all of those factors. So social media has just made this complete transparency. And by the way, if corporations aren't talking about what they're doing and putting their policies out there and making it public and engaging with people through these social media channels, it creates a vacuum. And people will talk about public figures. People will talk about brands, and they'll give their own opinion. So you want your voice to be heard. In general, the reason that there's such a demand for this type of service that we're offering on the social media standpoint is because CEOs just don't have time often to be writing blogs and putting out information all the time about what they're doing. But yet, because of the change in social media over the last the prevalence of social media over the last year and a half, there is a need for that. And traditional media and traditional PR is really not bridging that gap. Now, to your point about what is authentic and what is window dressing in terms of CSR, I think that's an excellent point, and a distinction has to be made. I have seen companies where they're really just trying to use something, you know, they've done one, you know, maybe they've been involved in a particular area, but they're using it to paint the picture of themselves as very either environmentally responsible or very employee friendly. And, you know, what happens is it's the same thing. Social media still has that boomerang effect. So if you put stuff out there about what your company is doing, people can vet it, people can look, you know, research it and see if it's authentic. And if it's not authentic, it just comes back to bite you.
What is your advice then to companies who are looking to cut some corners and sit there and say, oh, look, we're spending a lot of money in this area, CSR, and maybe we should just cut back there? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Corporate social responsibility is not, this is what I say all the time. It's not just good, it's good for the brand and good for the soul. So while you're doing the right thing, let's say, in the karmic scheme of things, you are actually creating a lot of long-term good for your company. And what I mean by that is it comes back to you in positive benefits in many ways, both financial and both quantitative and qualitative. And that is, I've seen this time and time again when organizations start to get involved with a cause and they really get behind a cause, there's something very very powerful that happens with the employees that are sort of working on these events or these volunteer events. There's a bonding that takes place, so there's a lot of cohesion that starts to come together. People feel a sense of pride in the place that they work. So there's the, you know, the old-fashioned team building that we used to, you know, pay a lot of money to do these sort of silly exercises. Well, I'll tell you right now, there's no more powerful team building than a whole group of people working towards a particular cause. So there's the employee angle. It's also been shown that corporate social responsibility is a talent magnet. People want to come and work for places that they feel are aligned with their values and belief system. So it's no longer satisfactory to just go work for a company and have the exchange be, you pay me, I work for you. Employees, just as any people, are starting to feel like, I really want to believe in what I'm doing here, and I want to think that there's more of a larger purpose or a larger picture purpose than just showing up for work every day.
So how can a woman business owner who maybe has not formally thought of CSR as an integral part of her business, is just maybe doing it by intuition, just naturally looking at the condition of her people, her community, the planet, and building some things in organically, but how could she be more formal about it? What are some ideas or examples of programs she could put in place to really infuse her corporate culture with the sense of social responsibility?
I think the most powerful examples of CSR are when a company is involved in something that's aligned with their brand. So if you're a company that's in, let's just give examples, publishing or, you know, something that relates to reading, you would naturally just look for nonprofits and organizations where you can help in this area. There's so much work to be done in this country still on literacy. There's so much work to be done on adult literacy as well as, you know, impoverished areas and underperforming students and tutoring and all of that. So I would say, you know, the first example that you gave is a perfect one. First, companies should really just look around and see within their communities, this is a needs-based idea, right? What do we need here? Do we need to instill a breakfast program at the school? Do we need to help retrain some of these people in our community that maybe have lost their jobs in the automotive and maybe they need to retrain in some kind of tech mode? So they have to look at what's around them and what the needs are of the communities in which they do business, because that strengthens everybody. If you strengthen the community in which you're trying to sell your products or services, that's going to come back in a positive way towards your business. That's sort of the immediate obvious way. And the secondary way is what I mentioned before, which is you can also look at what makes sense for your particular business. You know, what area are you working in, and how can you sort of think a little broader about that area and encompass many more communities of people getting involved in that particular industry?
How do you introduce that into your corporate structure when there are so many different kinds of people with different kinds of interests?
Okay, well, I've been meaning to get to the Great Leaders Conference, so I'll give you an example from that. So the Great Leaders Conference is a CSR event in itself, meaning proceeds from the conference are going to go to Room to Read, which is a nonprofit organization in San Francisco that focuses on literacy and gender equality in education. So quite simply, educating girls. In a couple of ways, we're tying back to this idea of literacy and how do you pick one cause over another, which is, I think, your question. And when I started to create the concept around the Great Leaders Conference, I knew that I was going to be focusing on CEOs because those are my customer base, right? I knew we were going to be talking about leadership and the changing culture of leadership. And a main theme threading throughout the whole conference from an intentional standpoint is what is the role of women in this changing culture of leadership? So we've touched on that in a number of ways. The first one is proceeds from the conference will go directly to Room to Read, and we've committed to building 15 libraries through Room to Read. So Room to Read is a fantastic organization. The founder, John Wood, wrote the book Leaving Microsoft to Change the World. What I really loved about this organization from the first time that we met about a year and a half ago or 2 years ago was that they have this focus on girls' education in parts and regions of the world where, quite frankly, girls are undervalued and maybe in some cases not even considered worthy of going to school. So I was seeking out specifically because it was one of my belief system was that the only way to change anybody's future is through literacy and reading, and certainly these girls in these very, very poor parts of the world, that could probably be one of the only things that could bring them out of that level of poverty. So we've done that for the event itself, and then a couple of the women I have on the conference agenda, one of them is Isabel Coleman, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with her. She just came out with a book called Paradise Beneath Her Feet, How Women Are Transforming the Middle East. She's writing on a very timely topic, and that is, it's about how microbanking, are you familiar with the microbanking?
Yes.
Trend, yeah. So how microbanking in developing parts of the world is having such a transformative effect on not only women, you know, small loans to women where they, women entrepreneurs, where they can start their own business, and, you know, the loans are $20, $50, $100, $200, very small by our standards, but they have this transformative effect not only on the woman and her immediate family, but on the community when you can start to create something and sell it and start your own little business, and really they just need a little seed money to get started. In the book, Isabel is talking about, she's bringing a lot more understanding to this area of the empowerment of women through entrepreneurship and starting their own business. And, you know, she talks a lot about equality in the Middle East and how women are struggling for their rights and, you know, educational rights for girls and women. So all of this points to this is just to point out that, you know, this is where my core belief and value system is that we really need to think about, beyond all the conflicts and international things that go on that we probably don't have that much control of in the world, we can certainly try to teach girls to read, right? And there's probably nothing more empowering than that in churning out, you know, successful people.
You've taken your core beliefs and an underlying theme through your upcoming event about women and leadership roles, and you've infused your event with a connection to a cause. Does that translate to a business, that the business owner who starts her business could say, you know, these are the things I believe in, and if you believe in these things too, you know, love to have you on board and love your support on these causes, because it's an integral part of the company that I've founded. Is that appropriate?
Yeah, that's absolutely accurate. And as people join, you know, if a woman has started a business and as people join her, you know, it's voluntary. If she can say, look, this is something I am a part of every year, I'm involved with breast cancer awareness, or, you know, whatever the cause is that, and most likely these causes have in some way touched these people's lives, right, they've come in contact with. And, you know, it's something that you put out there for your employees and your staff to get involved with on a volunteer basis if they want to. But as a business owner, the entrepreneur can decide that, I'm also going to give at a particular level every year, and that's my choice as a business owner, right? So I'm going to make sure that I'm giving back and that I am supporting this cause financially, as well as, and sometimes it's even more powerful, to get your teams, your employees, all of them on the same page, all of them involved in a cause. It has tremendous positive cascading effects back to the brand and the corporate culture.
I would venture to also guess that a lot of women, and even I would say now that I'm a mom, a lot of moms are incredibly cognizant of what they're buying and from whom they're purchasing and what brands they are loyal to based on the impact of those companies on the community, on the world, on people. So can you just sort of sum this all up in terms of how the company can be impacted, bottom line wise, because of that discriminating consumer?
A number of mega trends that have transpired over the last year and a half have changed the entire canvas for what it means to do business in this country. I think I mentioned social media just as a communication, two-way communication channel that just cannot be ignored. I would also say that the economic collapse, you know, had a great deal to do with it. I would say that even recent events as recent and ongoing as the oil spill in the Gulf have all sort of, this is all sort of coming together in this confluence of trends where I think there has been a failure of leadership in many, many areas in terms of our business leadership. And I think that your everyday consumer can see these trends just as well as anybody running and owning a business and just feels like, you know what, I just want to do my part in terms of I want to support companies that believe in what I believe in. And there is a concept called you believe in what I believe in, and it's a very strong sort of psychology around if you get aligned with a brand because you believe in what they're doing, you will be loyal to that brand till the cows come home. You know, you will buy from them, you will go out of your way to buy from them, even if it's a little less convenient. Suddenly the equation about who consumers would buy from moves away from who's the cheapest provider, right? Especially if they have read an article in the New York Times that the cheapest provider is getting maybe toys or products in from the Far East that are tainted, or that the factory workers back building those toys are, you know, completely living in completely depraved conditions. So because of all of this news and information that we're being suddenly privy to on a pretty abnormal scale, right? You can sort of see everything that's going on with companies and with their suppliers in a way that you could never see before. It empowers consumers to say, you know what, I'd rather go out of my way to buy for that company that I know is doing a great thing, you know, down the street for me every year on, you know, MS. And they do that walk and they believe in that and they give money. Whatever the cause is, it gives consumers a reason to be loyal to you and want to work with you. And the negative is also true. So there's this level of exposure where consumers can say, I'm going to vote with my wallet and I'm going to buy from the company that I believe is doing the right thing.
And I'm going to post it on Facebook and I'm going to tweet about it and let people, all my friends and fans and followers, know how I feel.
Yes, exactly. I have more power than I ever had before as well to let everybody know my bad experience with this particular company or this particular company's practices overseas that, you know, we're not going to support it. So yeah, they can communicate it on a massive scale very, very quickly. Now, there's really no place to hide anymore. You need to be, you know, up and up in your practices. You need to be treating your employees right. You need to be looking at the source of your, you know, all of the source value chain of your suppliers. And you also need to be making sure that you're doing the right thing by the environment. I mean, these are just all the new realities of doing business, I would say.
You've been listening to Woman at Work Radio, hosting by Posterous.com, music by RoyaltyFreeMusic.com. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, email mediaegg@gmail.com. And you could like our Facebook page at facebook.com/womenatworkradio. Until next time, keep up the good work.